More action needs to be taken on the Myanmar side in terms of freedom of movement, access to services, ending the discrimination.
A renewed focus on Rohingyas. It's Thursday, May 20th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're online. You can find us at Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, a new Chinese university, reestablishing supply chains, cemetery art. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The United States says it is providing new assistance to Myanmar's Rohingya Muslim minority, many of whom have fled violence for neighboring Bangladesh or have been internally displaced. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said in a press release that $155 million in additional funds will be used to sustain critical efforts to support Rohingya refugees and host communities in Bangladesh and internally displaced Rohingya and other affected people in Burma. Meanwhile, at the launch of this year's Rohingya Refugee Donors Conference, Bangladesh led a chorus of growing voices calling for durable solutions to resolve the ongoing crisis. Lisa Schlein has more for VOA from Geneva.
New pledges have been rolling in, but UN agencies are expressing concern about donor fatigue. They worry they might not receive the $943 million they need to assist 1.4 million Rohingya refugees and the Bangladeshi communities hosting them in Cox's Bazar. Last year, the UN's $1 billion joint response plan garnered only 60% of that amount. Bangladesh State Minister for Foreign Affairs Shahryar Alam says the launch is the fourth annual appeal for the Rohingya temporarily sheltering in his country. He says he wondered how long the refugees can continue to suffer in overcrowded camps and how long the international community can sustain such massive humanitarian support. He says it is important to seek a permanent solution to the Rohingya refugee crisis to avoid repeating similar exercises every year.
All undertakings under the GRP or any other funding mechanism should be implemented, keeping this overarching objective in mind. The priority areas that have been identified in the GRP must be aligned with the core objective of preparing the Rohingyas for their return. And any projects such as education or skill development should be designed and implemented in ways that will help Rohingyas to integrate in their society upon their return to Myanmar.
The minister acknowledges this might not be the most propitious time for the Rohingya to return home. UN High Commissioner for Refugees Filippo Grandi agrees the military coup by Myanmar's generals on February 1st precludes the safe and dignified return of the refugees. He says the UNHCR and other agencies are present in Rakhine State in Myanmar to create the conditions necessary for the refugees to return to their homes of origin.
Clearly, this has not happened so far because besides the work that we do, more action needs to be taken on the Myanmar side in terms of freedom of movement, access to services, ending the discrimination that has caused, in fact, the exodus of people into Bangladesh.
Meanwhile, High Commissioner Grandi says the Rohingya people must not be forgotten. He says the international community must continue to support the refugees as they have no other means of survival. He notes Rohingya continue to flee violence in Myanmar. He renews his appeal to neighboring countries, mainly India and Thailand, to keep their borders open and not to deport them back to a country where their lives are at risk. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. India posts record-setting one-day COVID-19 death toll. Indian Navy ships recover 22 bodies of people who died on sinking barge. U.S. announces increase in aid to Rohingya. South Korean president to meet Biden at White House. Taiwan, once an icon for COVID control, grapples now with first serious outbreak. You'll find much more on these stories with expanded coverage at Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and of course our website, voanews.com. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Let's continue with VOA Asia. Hungary has announced plans to open a branch of a Chinese university in Budapest. Critics fear the development of the first of its kind in Europe will be used by Beijing to spread Chinese Communist Party propaganda. Henry Ridgewell reports.
Budapest, soon to become the first European host of a Chinese university. Under the plans, this wasteland outside the city will soon become a branch of the Shanghai-based Fudan University. Hungary says it will raise education standards, offer courses to 6,000 students, and bring Chinese investment and research to the country. For China, it's a significant milestone, says analyst Steve Sang.
Now they are exporting a Chinese university branch on European soil, a member of the European Union. This is, I think, tremendously important from their perspective in how it shows that China has risen.
2 years ago, Hungary's Central European University, backed by Hungarian-born US-based financier George Soros, was effectively forced out of the country through changes to the education law. Hungary's government accuses Soros of political interference, which he denies. The mayor of Budapest, a member of the political opposition, says Hungarians are being betrayed.
Let's put the two next to each other. There was something which has offered an open education, did not cost a penny for Hungarian taxpayers, was a well-established university in Hungary, and was exiled. And now the government brings in another one which represents the ideology of the Communist Party and costs the Hungarian taxpayers billions.
Leaked government documents estimate the cost at $1.8 billion, more than Hungary spent on its entire higher education system in 2019. Most of the funding will come from a Chinese bank loan, and construction will be carried out using mostly Chinese materials and labour. Fudan ranks among the top 100 universities in the world. Its expansion into Europe is part of Beijing's efforts to control the narrative on China, according to Tsang.
When we are dealing with the humanities and social sciences side of the curriculum, it is clear that the Communist Party will keep control of it. It was only in the last 2 years that the Fudan University changed clearly its instructions on its relationship with the party state, now clearly declaring that its first mission is not to uphold academic integrity, but to follow the leadership of the party.
In a statement to VOA, the Hungarian government said that Fudan is one of the best universities in the world that will not be engaged in ideological education, but will provide economic courses. The U.S. Embassy in Budapest has released a statement expressing its concerns, given, in its words, Beijing's proven track record of using academic institutions to advance a malign influence agenda and stifle intellectual freedom. The university campus is expected to be built by 2024. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Happening now in Asia, China's foreign ministry said the United States' anti-Beijing Winter Olympics remarks were, quote, full of lies, a day after U.S. House of Representatives Speaker Nancy Pelosi called for a U.S. diplomatic boycott of the 2022 Winter Games. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy, as always, to have you with us today on VOA Asia. In February, the Biden administration ordered a review of critical U.S. supply chains after COVID lockdowns disrupted many vital production networks. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more on those disruptions, which led to creative problem-solving for organizations delivering life-saving aid.
And Dae Sin Dieng walks in the footsteps of her four mothers. Like generations of Senegalese women before her, Dieng dries, smokes, and salts fermented fish caught by the men in her community. But then the pandemic came. Many men stopped fishing. When women found fish, they did not have buyers. Markets closed. Borders followed. The supply chain snapped.
COVID has changed our work and our life. Since there is COVID, we live in fear. We are afraid to go far and be affected by COVID-19. It has caused a very, very, very big impact on our local community.
Dieng's story is one of supply chains. While her local economy suffers, so too do the economies up and down the chain. The markets, the mariners, all of the people who make their livings through commerce and trade. The issue also hits home with those working in global health. Gashao Shifarao is senior technical advisor at the nonprofit Management Sciences for Health, or MSH. The organization works with governments in more than 40 mostly low-income countries to provide supply chain solutions to their health programs. Success, he says, is all about getting the right medicines to the right places.
To get those products, you need to have a system, and that system is a supply chain.
These chains are only as strong as their weakest link, and this past year put weak links to the test.
COVID is a great lesson, which is a disaster. I mean, we looked at last year when there is global shortage everywhere, including the United States. That was a panic where the regular supply chain system we have been working, we need to rethink.
Shifarao says MSH worked with the government of the Philippines to develop a data collection app that shows the number of resources and areas in need to keep the supply chains moving. Ultimately, Shifarao says he's optimistic that global health supply chains are bouncing forward, not back, after the year of the pandemic. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
Greenwood Cemetery in New York is one of the oldest and largest American cemeteries. And now it has its own artist in residence. Anna Nelson tells us more in this report narrated by Anna Rice.
Since taking the artist-in-residence job at New York's Greenwood Cemetery, artist Heidi Lau's morning walks start at the grave of Tiffany's jewelry company founder, Charles Louis Tiffany.
The door, you know, that's like, you know, I feel like it's kind of like, this is almost kind of like a miniature building, except not, you know, it's like taking all the elements of the building and then condense it, but it's not really a functional building. You know, it's just like, you know, it's just like how like abstract and like almost like caricature.
There are 500,000 dead people here, among them many who were once famous, and as many gravestones. It can hardly be called a typical workplace, but it is one that is supposed to inspire the 33-year-old artist. It all began when the Greenwood, founded in 1838 and one of America's first rural cemeteries, announced that it was looking for an in-residence artist. Heidi Lau got the job.
For the residency and in general for all the art that we do here, we try to steer away from the Halloween-y and the spooky. And we had over 964 applications, and there were a large handful of them that were trying to, you know, do things with costumes that were spooky, that, you know, were ghostly, and that's not something we're interested in.
For 9 months, Lau was given a little house on the cemetery's grounds to do her work, as well as an honorarium of $7,500. Always interested in what happens after death, Lau, as a sculptor, has been trying to convey her perception of it through art. She came to the U.S. from China and brought with her the mortuary ceremonies she remembered when her grandparents passed away. She believes her ritual sculptures could be of use in New York's funeral homes. As for working alone at a cemetery, Lau says it has not been a problem.
The cemetery is very active right now, unfortunately, part because of COVID. You know, like it does feel like very like real or like sad, you know, that like, you know, seeing like grieving families.
Lau hopes the unusual experience will inspire her to create more.
I guess I don't think about being surrounded about death in that way, but I kind of just kind of like, you know, reminder that like, there's no guarantee, you know, there really is no guarantee, you know, like, yeah, death is never like too far away from anyone. I mean, especially now.
For Anna Nelson in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
That's our program for today. Thanks for joining us on VOA Asia. Come back again at the same time tomorrow. In the meantime, you can follow us online. We're at Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We also thank our service chief, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a terrific day ahead. Be safe. Be well.